G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Good morning to you, Whitey.
Yeah, it was a big night of sport. I think a few Tiger fans might have got a little bit nervous during that third quarter, maybe the start of the last quarter, with a bounty really on that win for the Tigers. They really needed to make sure they just found a way to win, I think, to make sure they had those top four hopes alive. And Damien Harwick absolutely gave it to them at three-quarter time, but in the end, they were just a little bit too good. And I think David King made the comment during the Fox Footy coverage last night, and I couldn't agree with him anymore. The Tigers have got gears, and they've proven that over the last 3 or 4 years, and it's one of the reasons why they are a good team. They can actually change the way they play, but also the intensity that they play at when required. And they certainly did that last night, because for a large portion of the match, it was like watching training.
It was an interesting game. And it was, I think, exceptionally well coached from Justin Longmuir's perspective. Because he had to change his style to defeat the Tigers last night, or try and be able to defeat the Tigers last night. He couldn't go in there and play shoot-em-up with Richmond and expect to win that game of footy. So they went in with a serious plan to bore the hell out of Richmond, to get the ball out of their hands. And, well, perhaps everybody, but I think if you're in that situation... And this is the beauty of coaching, and this is why... I remember talking about this the other week with Rocket. Having an ability to... This is why people talk about Alistair Clarkson. Having an ability to transform the way your team plays depending upon the opposition that you're playing against. Because not always will your system be suited to playing another team's system. You'll either not be good enough at the stage of your development, or the systems just don't match up and you're going to get beaten more often than not. And 8 out of 10, 7 out of 10, you're going to get beaten just because the way you play doesn't suit or is unsuited to defend the way the other team play, or vice versa. And what we saw last night from Fremantle was again another way, tactical arm wrestle. And it wasn't pretty, and it was boring as bat droppings is what it was, if you were looking for excitement. But from a tactical perspective, I sat there and I think, good on you, Justin. Good on you for trying something different. It's no different to the Terry Wallace... Richmond Adelaide?
Flood game.
Where they had a billion marks.
Yeah, it was against Richmond. Richmond and Adelaide, yeah, it was.
Where they just had a billion marks, and Joel Bowden took 87 marks or something that day, like an unbelievable amount of marks. Because they came up with a plan and executed it on that day. Now, I think that's great coaching, I must admit. I love that stuff. Now, I don't want it every week, but you don't get it every week because you don't have those problems matching up against different styles or certain styles every week. So I thought it was brilliant from Justin Longmuir last night. If I was a Fremantle player, I would have been, Fremantle fan, I would have been wrapped with what my boys were putting out there. They showed a capacity to play another style, a capacity to learn and execute against one of the most ferocious teams, one of the most high-pressure teams in the competition. And I reckon it's a big tick in the coaching box of Justin Longmuir.
Can you win doing that, or can you just get close doing that?
No, I reckon you can win. I reckon you can win. Now, Richmond are a bloody hard team to beat. They don't lose many games. You give yourself a chance to win doing that. And I think that's what you want to give. And Fremantle are a long way from being a powerful team at the moment. One of their strengths has been restricting opposition's scoring as opposed to scoring themselves. And they kicked last night 4 goals. That's not going to win you many games. So there's that layer that they're going to have to add to their system in the next little while. But I think they disarmed Richmond. He disarmed Richmond last night, Justin Longmuir, in the way that he coached his players. And I think that's fabulous. Wasn't great for footy. Wasn't great for viewing, sorry. But bad luck. They're not there for the viewing last night. He's there to teach his players and show them there are different ways to skin a cat.
Yep. I don't disagree with you necessarily, but I just... Yeah, I don't know. I just feel that that might get you close, but it might not necessarily get you winning. I mean, Fremantle have done a lot of good things over a long period of time this season, in that they look good defensively at times, but their inability to score just means they don't win very many games. Now, whether that's the next layer for next year, I'm not sure. Is it easier to stay in a game technically, but never really be able to win it? I'm not sure. I mean, they have got close to quite a few good teams over the course of the season, so Yeah, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, so they haven't been able to score, picking up on the point, they haven't been able to score very well through the journey. So what makes them think they're going to be able to do it against Richmond? One of the highest pressure defending teams in the competition. So you've got to find another way. This is my point. You've got to find another way.
Yeah.
Now, that won't be every week for Fremantle, what we saw last night. But next week, they've got...
But hasn't it been that way for most of the year, though?
No, not like that. They had a real...
Not to that extreme,
No. They had a real focus on denying Richmond the ball, of taking all the energy out of the game. Not continual flow and play, because Richmond gets you on the turnover. We saw it in the last quarter and a bit. Every time they scored that many goals from defensive 50 in the last quarter, it wasn't funny. Their transition was ridiculous. It was almost back to the 2017 Tigers, the rampaging Tigers. So I think it was great. You got to try something to beat the best teams, because he knows he hasn't got the best team at his disposal. He knows they're not ready yet. And you're not going to be entertained every game in a season like this anyway. So I think good on him. Good luck to him. It was fabulous.
All right. Okay. I'll take your word for it. It was a hard watch.
Yeah, it was.
But
absolutely.
I understand what you're saying. So looking at the ladder as it stands at the moment, Richmond is in second position. But because of the way the season is this year, they've currently played two more games than Brisbane, who are sitting in fourth position. So the Tigers now have a bye before they finish with Geelong and Adelaide. Richmond have got 42 points. Port Adelaide, 44 points with one less game. But both Geelong, Brisbane and West Coast with games in hand, and in Brisbane's case, two games in hand, if they keep winning, Richmond will tip out of the top four. So I kind of feel like it's West Coast or Richmond for that fourth spot. But there's still so many things that can happen, even though there's only a handful of games remaining for all teams. So it just shows the importance of that game for last night for Richmond, that last quarter, that they did finish off well, because I don't think they would have been able to make the top four had they not won that game last night. So, yeah, interesting times, which is good. It's good. There's so much still unknown before the final series start.
I'd be surprised if they can get there, I must admit. With what the draws are for the other teams, I'd be surprised if they can get there. West Coast, aren't they?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, the problem with West Coast is also that they just don't play very well in Queensland. I mean, I still think that really they were there to be beaten by Essendon the other night, and Essendon, talking about forward line issues, Essendon, again, just couldn't maximise their opportunities. Now, again, West Coast defends well, so it made it hard and all those sorts of things. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think the Eagles are vulnerable. News coming out yesterday that Luke Shuey will be out of action until the final series at best after injuring both hamstrings. It wasn't quite the extent of Adam Treloar from a couple of years ago, but still fairly serious. You know, Elliot Yeo's still not there. So they've got a couple of issues, West Coast, but the main one is that they don't play very well in Queensland. But, but even the Brisbane-Collingwood game is fascinating tomorrow night because it's not a given that Brisbane just win that game. And that sort of, may change everything as well. So, yeah, it's good. Makes us not think about other things.
What sort of other things? What are you thinking about? What are you not thinking about?
Well, restrictions and
roadmaps
and all these sorts of things. We don't really want to be thinking about that sort of stuff, because I don't think we're really going to be overly enthusiastic what we hear on Sunday.
The Herald Sun Expose today, we're not overly wrapped about that, Whitey. No, they're wrapped about that at all. If that's what they're seeing and printing today is what's going to be happening at the end of Stage 4 in September 14. A couple of weeks up, that's what they're going to throw at us. So the Herald Sun tells me today.
We're no Brett Sutton types, but I don't think that there's too much to be getting excited about with what we'll hear on Sunday. I think everyone's using this as the sort of the ray of hope. I don't think that I don't think too much will change quickly.
Well, not according to this. Another 2 weeks are basically the same. Although, good news for everyone, this is something we cannot underestimate the importance of. According to the graph today in the local daily, in the Herald Sun, libraries will be open for contactless collection and delivery. So that's what will change from Sunday, we're led to believe. So great news for all the heavy readers out there, that you'll be able to get your books for contactless collection and delivery, which is fantastic. That's about it. That's about the only change. another hour of exercise, 2 hours per day. You can split it up into two sessions if you need to. Now, that's about it for another 2 weeks, so they're telling us. That's quite depressing, I must admit. I wasn't happy about that when I read that this morning.
I just get the suspicion, and I've said this to you a few times, both on the radio and off the radio, that they feel that they want to actually eliminate the virus in Australia. And they'll do what they can to actually eliminate it rather than wait for a vaccine. Because they've seen what they've been able to do in other states, and they want to try and give Victoria the best chance at it.
Well, I've told you about the vaccine. Don't get excited about the vaccine. I'm in the fraternity here. But do not get excited about the vaccine. It's going to take, if there is one ever, long time. That's the reality. They could tell us about pre-Christmas and Scotty telling us about the Oxford one. It's a long way to go with all the trials and whatever, and they'll rush them through as much as they can if they got one that has any effectiveness. Don't get excited about that.
Well, let's change something, please. This is making me a little bit emotional. Let's just move on, please.
Well, that's good for your regime, because you've got 2 hours to get out there now. Like, you can go berserk from Sunday. You can go gangbusters and get yourself really active. Get back on the bike and just... Yarra Trail yourself silly and into the city and back. You'd be fantastic.
You can't go outside 5 kilometres, Daniel.
Well, just do a couple of loops. Pretend it's the city.
Yes.
Now,
yes,
I know it's interesting, actually, about all this sort of stuff. I noticed that Mark Allen's been very active on this on Twitter. The great Mark Golfer, who was former number 177 in the world and had a... season high, I think record still, season high sand save average on the PGA Tour. I know he's very, very active on the Premier Dan stuff and the COVID-19 situation on Twitter. I don't know where he's ever had this interest before. He's a real sort of golf man.
There's a few people that have become quite political on social media over the last period of time.
Oh, Marco's up to these days.
He's in... people changing their occupations moving forward, Daniel.
Hey, we're going to talk to Craig Gabriel and Phil Rockner in a little while after the first break. What about the news yesterday? We saw Gillon McLachlan out at the back of the golf course yesterday, which was just rubbing salt into the wounds of all Victorians, just by the way, don't have your press conference in Queensland with the golf course as the backdrop. Announcing yesterday that the Gabba would be hosting the AFL Grand Final in season 2020. Interestingly, the contingency was announced too, that if all goes pear-shaped up there in Hubville, we can have it at the Adelaide Oval. Adelaide Oval's on standby for the AFL Grand Final. I was surprised that they announced that yesterday, I must admit. But they do have a contingency in place for the AFL Grand Final. There will be the week between the home and away season and the finals, Whitey, which we discussed yesterday. It looks like Powderfinger's just about locked, Powderfinger. Well, you do understand it. You do, because one of the things that they want to have, they've made very clear on the finals in the last couple of years, is they want it to be the showpiece and they want the best players playing. So it just gives them that window. This is, and they've probably expedited the season to be able to give themselves that window of a week to give themselves the buffer so that they can get that to happen. It's probably one of the reasons we've had the second festival of footy. I know there's obviously been COVID opportunities there and implications, so they weren't able to make that happen, but I'm pretty sure that that would have been one of the reasons. They want to have the final still as the showpiece and still as everything that the fans look forward to, for the best players playing at the best time of year with everything on the line. And you do that best, and I didn't agree with it at the start of it when they first introduced it, but I do now. You do that best by allowing that extra week for everyone to be cherry ripe for the final assault for the Premiership Cup. And I think that makes sense. In this environment, there is a little bit of grey area. I get your concern. But I think if you want a pure final series, you need to have that week to make all the teams have their best chance to get the list out there.
No, I don't disagree with that as such, but considering that we've been playing games every 3 and 4 days, every 4 or 5 days to sort of, you know, get the season away, and we've had injuries as a result of that, of the compressed schedule.
But no more than any other year, players, the data says.
Players have Yeah, well, that's true too, I guess. But I just think if they're rushing it through, just continue on that. Don't then get into a situation where all of a sudden we'll now have a break of a week. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But anyway.
So would you play the finals every 4 or 5 days and get it done in 3 weeks?
No, I would just go back and I just wouldn't have the break. Just would get straight into it the next weekend. That would be what I would do. But I'm not surprised that they've done what they've done. What surprises me more than anything else, Daniel, and I do get a bit emotional about this, and I know I shouldn't, but I do every year. The interest in the grand final entertainment. In my view, it's who cares? I have no interest in it whatsoever. And to be honest, if you go back through the years, people can't remember who played at the grand final in general. You can't reel them off.
I don't know about that.
It's about the football. It's not about the entertainment. But it's almost like all the commentary around what time the grand final will be played and will it be played at night is because of what that means for the grand final entertainment. Who cares?
Well, people care, clearly. Clearly people care. People do care. You and I don't, necessarily, about who's playing at halftime or the start of the game or whatever it might be. But seemingly, it is a topic for discussion that the fans want to get their teeth into. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it.
Do they?
Yep. Well, every year that I've spoken about the grand final, the build-up to the grand final when it's been announced, any time the conversation revolves around the entertainment, you get a flurry of interaction. On any forum that you use, you get a flurry of interaction. So people clearly are engaged in that conversation to a degree. You did reference the main point there, which I didn't include before, was of course it's going to be a night grand final for the first time. So we'll see. The broadcasters will get happy. It's after the Cox Plate. So Cox Plate into the AFL Grand Final. I'm okay with that. I can work with that, I think. And it gives them a chance to see what it looks like. It's that opportunity, once in a lifetime opportunity to try before you buy without really affecting the product at this point. So it's a great opportunity for the AFL to see what it could be. The Queensland government wanted to make it make sure it's never gone back to a day grand final again, they were saying yesterday.
Yeah.
Make it that spectacular.
Look, I think half that... I'm certainly not surprised that it's being played at night, but if the reason for playing at night is simply because there is more opportunity for more people to watch it, then that's fine. But anyone saying that, we're having it at night, so that's going to make a better atmosphere for the grand final entertainment. Seriously.
No one's saying that.
That just annoys me. Oh, people are. Yeah, people are, to be honest. It annoys me. But
I think you're listening to the
wrong people. There is a bit of a dangerous precedent attached to this, I think, because as a traditionalist, and there are a lot of traditionalists out there, my view is that the grand final should always be played during the daytime because it creates the best opportunity for the football to be as good as it can be.
Agreed.
However, I think that if the grand final, when it is played at night, gets so many more people watching, I don't know whether they'll be able to go back, the AFL, because from a commercial perspective, it would be too big a carrot to take that away, I think.
Yeah, don't know how it goes. I suppose it's going to be one of the driving forces behind that decision. But I'm like you. I think it should be an afternoon time slot for the best chance for a pure football perspective. The players don't want it at night. They've been voting against that for years, which is interesting considering most of the games they play these days are at night. Certainly through a finals campaign, most of the games are at night.
Yeah, they are.
It is interesting, but they too, according to surveys from the PA and all that sort of stuff through the years, have been keen for that afternoon time slot just for that reason, I think. I don't give a reason why in those surveys, but I imagine that would have been one of the reasons why that they want to see it continue to be played during the day. And I'm all for that, by the way. I think it should be a day game, but we'll see what happens with the commercial realities and particularly post this year, Whitey, when revenue sources have been drawn up. I imagine you do spend some time considering the maximising every opportunity.
Yeah, definitely.
For the
and I think that's fair enough. I think that's fair enough. I truly do. I think, and again, if you've said this, I've said this throughout the course of the year. If you're ever going to try something, this is the year to try something. Yep. And I think that whatever happens moving forward, whenever the vaccine becomes available, I think that they've got a real good lot of evidence about how football might look into the future. You know, we've talked about the 16-minute quarters. I think there had been a temptation to look at that even before this pandemic took hold. And I think they've got some good evidence on that now. You know, playing every night, Big Bash style. Remember, we talked about that way back at the very, very start of this year, that would be something they'd like to look at. Well, they've done that now. So, you know, I think this is the year to try something. I'm not, you know, even the fact that it's away from the MCG, I'm not as fussed about that as I thought I perhaps might have been when we were first discussing the possibility of that, to be honest.
Well, you're going to be locked in your house anyway, so it doesn't matter. Can I introduce Craig Gabriel as part of this conversation? Because I mentioned his involvement at the Australian Open. So Craig would have been hanging out with Ruud Fu, no doubt, in the players' lounge at some stage. Craig, good morning.
I'm sexy, and I know it. Hey, I'll give you a connection to tennis with Ruud Fu. I mean, he likes his tennis, but he was always there for Vika Azarenka.
That's right, yes.
Every single time, and then... Then he started to get into sitting other players' boxes. And do you know who his father is?
I do know who his father is. I can't remember who it is. Who is it?
Barry Gordy.
Yes.
The music impresario.
Yes, that's right. That's how he got a job, I reckon.
Yeah.
So how old is he, Craig? I'm going to ask you as well. We have a birthday bulletin here.
I think he's in his 50s or something. I'm not 100%.
Well, I can tell you that today, our man Ruud Fu is 45 years of age.
Well, he looks like he's in his
50s. So, Craig, did Ruud Fu appreciate Victoria Azarenka's tennis or just appreciate Victoria Azarenka?
Don't they have a kid? He appreciated the grunt.
Right. I thought they had a kid together.
No,
I don't think so.
Her child, her little boy, who I think is now 2 years old or 3 years old, was a liaison with her ex-coach.
Right.
So, and there became a custody issue and all that with the child.
Well, right. She's on court at the moment. Playing doubles at the moment, she is, Vicar. Just by the way. But on court at the moment, and after our stadium, Craig, as we moved to more of the tennis opportunities here, Novak Djokovic lost the first set against Kyle Edmund. What's going on?
Look, Edmund has beaten him on one previous occasion. So this is their seventh meeting. It's 5-1 on the head-to-head to Novak. And Novak has also beaten him here at the U.S. Open a few years ago. Look, it was obviously very tight. That first set was 7-5 in the tiebreak to Edmund. And I think it's really a case of Djokovic was getting into a bit of a rhythm, but he was also getting frustrated with some situations on the court during that set. But he's rebounded now. He's taken the second set 6-3. He's up 4-2 in the second set. In the third set, rather.
Right. Okay. All right. So we'll keep an eye on Novak through the morning. Any other big names out there on court at the moment?
Well, you just mentioned Vika in that double. She and Sofia Kenin, the Australian Open singles champion, they've just won their doubles. They've beat two Australians, Perez and Sanders, 2-6, 6-2, 6-2, Ellen Perez and Storm Sanders. So Azarenka and Kenin are the number seven seed. They do make a pretty tough doubles combination. Now, as far as others... Karolina Pliskova has just gone out there. She's facing Caroline Garcia. Pliskova is the number one woman seed. David Goffin. The Goff is on court playing Lloyd Harris of South Africa. It is 2-1 to the Goff. And let me just see. That's pretty much it as far as the bigger names on court right now. But there's great news for Australia, because Jordan Thompson is into the third round of the U.S. Open. He's never reached a third round before, and he won in four sets over Igor Gerasimov of Belarus. And it was 6-1, 6-4, 3-6, 6-3, 2 hours, 45 minutes.
Good on him. Fantastic stuff. Fantastic. Angelique Kerber's through as well to the third round.
Angie Kerber's through. Petra Kvitova is through. but did you hear about the complete collapse and calamity of Kiki Mladenovic?
Now, no.
Oh, goodness gracious me. Woman, how are you playing with a result like this? 6-1, 5-1, four match points she had.
What?
Yes.
6-1, 5-1, four matches.
Four matches, exactly right. Not scratchies, but matches. And she'll be scratching her head after that one. And she lost to Varvara Gracheva of
You're
Russia.
You're kidding.
1-6, 7-6, 6-love.
Oh, she bageled the third set.
Mm-hmm.
That is toys
certainly
out of the
did.
Cot.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
oh, wow.
That is the result of today, really. It's going to be hard to beat that one.
Wow, that is quite remarkable.
But yep. I mean, she's a seed, though, as well, Craig.
30th seed, yeah.
Gee, so, that's a complete combustion job.
Oh, total combustion job. I'm trying to think. There was a men's match at the U.S. Open. I think it was Manuel Orantes. In the semifinal, he was facing, I think it was Jimmy Connors, maybe, from memory, or Vilas, and Orantes was, like, gone, done and dusted. You know, he was, like, 5-1 down in the third set and was facing, like, seven match points. And he ended up winning and then went on to win the U.S. Open.
Wow.
Right.
Hey, can you tell me about Jennifer Brady? I keep hearing about this young woman who's going places in a hurry. She smacked her opponent today, Catherine Ballas, 6-1, 6-2. And I keep hearing that she's one to keep an eye on. It. Is that correct?
Yeah, she's the 28th seed. Look, she's had some progress over the last 12 months. It's her, and there's also, obviously, Bellis is another one. I mean, there's a few young Americans around that sort of age group, and then also the Australian Open champion, Sophia Kenin. So maybe they're just going to push one another. I have to admit, I know a bit about her. I haven't seen her play, but, you know, there are even some teenagers on the American women's side that are starting to make a bit of a move. They've got wild cards, and then you've got Amanda Anisimova as well, who's 19, and it was seeded over here. So maybe Brady could make a bit of a move as well amongst this group.
I'm stunned that Daniel's got that inside information. That's very impressive.
I've been doing some reading. I care.
There's two things I want to mention, Craig, before we let you go, that has happened since we last spoke. Now, admittedly, it did happen yesterday. But firstly, on Kim Clijsters, she took the first set, but unfortunately she couldn't stick on and win her match as she continues this incredible comeback. How is the comeback being assessed?
Not too bad. I mean, certainly that third set was very one-sided. It was 6-1, and I think maybe she got a little bit tired. Let's also remember that Kimi hasn't played much. She's got to get back into it. There's still the grittiness there, still some of those ground strokes and determination. But I think more matches she gets under her belt, and the more acclimatized she is back at this level, I think she should do okay. I'm not saying she's going to get top 10 or anything, but it was a lot of fun watching her, seeing her back on court. Yeah, the thing is with Kimi is that she's got to remain healthy. In fact, I'm talking about not so much sickness or anything, but staying fit, not breaking down. She had to delay her comeback because of injury and because of training too much, etc. So that's going to be the big factor with Kim.
Phil Rochner is one of the sexiest men on the planet. He's going to cover the Tour de France for us in 2020, and he's with us this morning. Welcome to The Breakfast Club, Phil Rochner.
Good morning, guys. I can't claim you're wearing anything Lacoste. It's more sort of Bonds, this style of lockdown, isn't it?
I was just thinking yesterday, Phil, as I pulled on my tracksuit pants for the 100th day in succession, that I've got a problem. I need a new pair of tracky pants because these ones are just becoming old hat and I haven't got another pair.
No, and the worst thing is at this point you don't care, do you?
No, that's exactly right. Exactly right. Although, they're caring at the Tour at the moment because it's game on, even though last night's Stage 5 was largely uneventful. That's not quite right in terms of the placings because there was a 20-second penalty handed out, Phil, to the yellow jersey winner, leader, Julian Alaphilippe. What happened?
Well, here's the deal. So he's the French favourite. Everybody loves him over there. He's like the darling of French cycling. They're desperate to get a win after being, you know, knocked out of contention for a number of years now. He got a feed or a water bottle, as the French call it, bidon. He got a bidon outside 17 kilometres outside of the finish, and that meant that he was a 20 seconds, loses the yellow jersey. So he's at the podium behind when he finishes, and they're like, "Nah, dude, it's not you today, mate." And so he's standing there going, "Oh, cool, that's cool." What it does mean, though, is that the Australian registered team, Mitchell and Scott, former Green Edge, Gerry Ryan owned, we know, Adam Yates has taken the yellow jersey as a result with a 3-second lead. So the Australian team, boys, with no Australians on it this year, are flying with Adam Yates, who is the Mitchell and Scott team. We kind of lean into those boys because of their heritage, but certainly now they are the yellow jersey leaders from a guy who they were just expecting stage wins, not this sort of honour.
Well, we spoke to Matty White last week, Phil, about what they wanted to achieve out of this, and they were talking about stage wins, but he did say that they've had the yellow jersey early in the tour for a couple of times, and they were keen for that to happen again. I imagine they weren't considering it to happen at this stage of the tour, considering Alaphilippe's form, but they'd be pretty wrapped with that, wouldn't they? I mean, how big is it to have the yellow jersey if you are a team on the tour?
It's enormous. It's enormous. If you think about the Western European media and how this race gets beamed out to the world, at the moment, boys, starving for professional sport. But anything that's got a yellow jersey on it, which has got the Mitchell and Scott logo branded all over it, he gets all the interviews, he gets all the press, he gets all the coverage when he's on the road today in the Stage 6. This is huge. And Mitchell and Scott, like any other team, has been hurting during the COVID period. There's been a real problem with them having the opportunity to continue to sign big riders because the budgets aren't there, because the money's not coming in, because the sponsors have withdrawn. But interesting side note, Adam Yates is on the move. He's actually leaving Mitchell and Scott at the end of this season. He's now heading over to Ineos, the Men in Black, which is the former Team Sky. He's heading over there. Bling Matthews, who is an Australian and he's an absolute weapon, he has been signed in the last couple of days to come back to Mitchell and Scott, where he was for a number of years. And that's a huge win for Aussies because he's a guy who can win big races around the world as an Australian in an Australian registered team. And I'm pretty sure Gerry Ryan did not have to be too convinced to find some money for this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, Phil, we're sort of five stages in now. From what you've observed, is it like it normally is? Obviously, there's all sorts of restrictions and protocols and these sorts of things, but to actually watch it and to actually see the racing, is it like we would normally see?
Look, it's a little weird, to be honest. Adam, it's not normal what's going on, obviously, but with the way the races are happening, there's not a lot of lead. There hasn't been any leading races. There hasn't been form finders. So your guess is as good as mine as to what sort of form the riders come with. But they had a little bit of racing prior to this, but nothing to give you a real form track. So it's unsure. We're all unsure about what's going to happen. The racing seems to be a little bit more reserved. They talked last night about a fairly flattish stage. There was no breakaway. In the tour, you always get those opportunists. Even if they go up the road for a few hours, it's called TV time. And while the cameras are following you, your team gets put, again, across Western Europe and the world in the breakaway. No one broke away last night on a 180K stage, which was won by a sprinter, which for mine, it's baffling why that happened, and there was a lot of talk about that and riders reluctant because they just don't know where their form sits. So, yeah, we are seeing some really interesting things at the moment that is not terribly normal. And, of course, you know, all the podiums cleared out, face masks and everything else, and that rolling bubble, which has a lot of people concerned as well as to if that will actually pop at some point during the tour.
So it is my pleasure to formally announce that the 2020 Toyota AFL Grand Final we played in Queensland at the Gabba.
In Queensland at the Gabba at night time. Brad Johnson would have been watching that press conference from the Chief yesterday thinking, what the hell does this mean for us at Fox Footy? How do I get there? And he's with us this morning on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Jono.
Good morning, Half. Good morning, Whitey. How are you guys? It's exciting. It was like the announcement of the Olympic Games yesterday, wasn't it? Really, the build-up to it, and you've got the Queensland Premier sitting with all her faithful around her, just waiting for the announcement to the winner is Sydney. So it was a bit of that, but look, it is exciting. Look, in all seriousness, when we drill down on it a little bit, I think we're all just sitting here wrapped that, you know, we are going to get a grand final out this year, and I think we all sit there and didn't worry where it was really going to be played. It was just the fact we have got through the season. The clubs have handled it really well. So have the AFL. So have the people to allow it to happen. You know, yep, being great in their community. So I'm just wrapped. We've got a granny. It's something different, boys. So I think it'll be good at night. I think it'll be a challenge because it could be a little bit greasy for the players, but that's okay. I think they're ready to handle it and see how we go.
That is my only concern, I must admit, John. I'm more than okay with the Gabba having it. I think it's the right outcome for Queensland and for football, considering what they've done to continue and allow the season to go ahead. I agree with your sentiments there. My concern is the night time and the dew and the slipperiness of the ball. Now, sometimes it can rain on grand final day too, so the ball gets slippery.
That's right.
But it's not a given, whereas you're a much better chance of having more difficult conditions at night in Queensland that time of year. Is that... I know you mentioned it's going to be a challenge, a bit of a different look, but is that what the grand final should be? Do we want that for the grand final, that level of impact by weather?
Oh, I think it'll be okay, Harv. I think the players are... Look, we're talking about professional players here. Let's not give them an out for a little bit of slipperiness on the ground, seriously. So, you know, they've just got to handle it the way that they have all year long. Yeah, early days, it probably took a little bit to adjust in the type of conditions the players entered when they first went up to Queensland, especially at Metricon Stadium, the first few games. But they're right to go now. Let's not give them that one. Let's just embrace what we're going to see. And it's going to be great. And hopefully the spectacle of the night grand final lives up to what we've been talking about for probably about the last 10 years.
In your eyes, Jono, does it suit any particular team, or does it cancel any team out from being able to win it? Based on where it's going to be played and, as Harv said, the conditions. Obviously, the Eagles have struggled in Queensland compared to at home, but, I mean, the Eagles are always going to be a better team in Perth than anywhere else. But you sort of does it give another team an extra chance, do you think, at it?
I think the Brisbane Lions will train at night for the remainder of the year. I think that's going to happen. Why wouldn't they? Why not change your training time from 10 a.m. in the morning to about 6 o'clock at night.
That's a good point.
So if I was Brisbane, I'd be looking at that at least once or twice a week in the lead up now, because they're the ones that are in prime position at the moment. They're a great footy team. They're great to watch. They've still got a bit of improvement in the way they're playing, but having it in Brisbane now, they'd be looking to take every advantage that they can leading into this final series. They're going to finish in the top four. They're going to get the double chance. They will be playing at the Gabba most likely throughout the entire final series. So maybe change things up a little bit now in terms of the way they prepare. Yes, they're used to it, but also training at night's a little bit different too. Not many clubs sort of do that these days.
Yeah, that's a bloody good point. We've got Lachie Neal coming on later on. We'll ask him that. We'll see if that's going to be a tactic or a ploy that they use going forward. So it's in Queensland. Do you get up there, Jono? Did the Fox get you up there somehow for this?
No. We missed the plane. We can get on the
it's
last
gotta
plane.
It's got to be another plane.
To Queensland. Well, you'd think there might be, but no, I think the structure of it all and the way that it's we've done it all year, and we're not going to take it away from Alistair Lynch. Let's be serious. He's been the hardest working man in football for the entire year. I think the man deserves the chance for Fox to be live at the ground and deliver everything that is needed. So that'll be good for Lynchy to be able to do that, travel 10 minutes down the road to participate at the grand final day for Fox Footy, and we'll at this stage, I'm not sure what decisions are going to be made, Harv. I'm just assuming at the moment things won't change from our point of what we've done all year, but you never know in this changing landscape all the time, mate.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. Lynchy needs to get that gig. That's right. He is the hardest working man in footy. We saw last night, Jono, the Tigers hang on in the end, or able to clear away in the end from a dogged Fremantle who certainly had a plan in place to stop them producing their style of footy all through the evening. They got away with them late, but it took them a little bit of a while. And it took a three-quarter time spray from Damien Hardwick. It was nice to see, wasn't it?
The spray is back. You beauty.
It was nice to see. When did footy become so nice, Jono?
I don't know. I don't know. It's we've seen it a little bit now throughout this year. There was the great vision of Chris Fagan just trying to inspire his boys in the rooms. And every time I see a spray, I go back to EJ Witten's back in the day. You know, I need you to inspire me. Give me everything you've got, sort of stuff back in the wet conditions at the Witten Oval. And that's what it is all about. Honestly, that's what Damien Hardwick was about. He was disappointed with the way that they were playing. They weren't handling Fremantle, just hanging around. And that's what Fremantle were doing, making it difficult. And he had to sort of try and rev them up. And that's all it was in the end. And the players accepted that way. That's all we did, Harp. Yeah, you might have got one between the eyes every now and then with your performance. But generally, the spray was in amongst just to inspire you, just to get you out of that little rut you're in at that particular time.
Yeah. All right, Jono. Now, you had a lot of coaches. You had quite a few.
Oh,
Harp, you had more than one.
You know the now, answer to this. Why?
Well, I don't think Jono would have got a spray from anybody. But is there one that stands out over your career that you do remember from one of your coaches? Not necessarily to you, but to the team?
The famous one was, and that was well documented on Year of the Dog, was Terry Wallace. If you guys get a pat on the back, I'll spew up. That's one of the best of all time. I got a few. Like early days, I got one. It was my 21st, and we played Carlton at Princes Park and didn't get a kick for the day. And after the game, Terry Wallace said to me, "You might as well have been at home setting up for your 21st tonight." So you can imagine what I copped after that from the boys. And then we turn up for my 21st. And we actually played the Brisbane Lions because we turned up to my 21st and the balloons that were all set up there were Brisbane Lions colours. So it just went from bad to worse. But anyway, that was a bit of fun in the end. And so Terry Wallace was... He was pretty good. He was more motivating, but he had a couple of famous ones along the way. And then Rodney Eade, everyone sort of gravitates to that, but I never copped a spray off Rodney Eade. What he'd do, he'd grab you on the forearm and walk you to his office. That you knew you were in trouble then. If he grabbed your forearm and just started walking with you, you knew something was coming. But he was always pretty controlled, Rocket, with us. A few guys did cop it between the eyes in the rooms, particularly Brian Lake and a couple of them, but that's okay. That's
big,
part
big
of
Will
at the time.
Big Will,
what about you, Harv?
I copped heaps of sprays. Actually, Ken Judge was a forearm grabber too. Thinking about that, maybe it was a Hawthorn thing back in the old days.
Have you ever copped a spray, Whitey, in your life?
Oh, from who?
From any coach, when you were coming through the ranks?
Not from your wife.
Plenty from me. I was the most undisciplined football there was. So, I think most of my coaches gave up on me and just decided to emotionally invest in people that actually cared when it came to football.
I just loved when we had some themes going on and some of the themes we had through the early days were quite funny, you know, when you're sort of going to war and these sort of things. And if you didn't succeed, then that's when you've copped the big spray afterwards. And, you know, I know guys that are still missing in action and guys that only bobbed up when the war was over and bits and pieces like that come about when you're playing. But you can look back now and just have a laugh at it. At the time, you're serious and you're flat and you've copped the spray. And 10 years later, you just laugh at what come your way.
Oh, I cut that many sprays. Not funny. I once got abused. I didn't perhaps have the best game. It was at Carlton at Optus Oval. And I didn't have the best game. And we got mauled by Carlton, which we often did back in those days, in the early 90s or mid-90s. And after the game, I got a spray because my photo was in the paper that morning. It was a club-sanctioned photo shoot. They, in fact, booked it for me, and I went and was one of the people in the photo. And Judgey gave me a match. I'm sick of seeing your head in the frigging paper! Can you get a kick?
That is so true. Anytime you'd wake up and you do an article during that week, for example, you just had to play well because you knew it was coming if you didn't.
But the sad thing was, Jono,
article.
The photo was taken 3 months before and they just hadn't used it. Like, it was in the off-season. They just hadn't... That was on file, waiting for a moment, and they used it that bloody day.
Not in Judgy's eyes, mate. That was that was right there on that morning you took that photo.
So I'm going to ask as a serious question to both of you. When you look back on it now, did they work?
Yes, definitely worked for me. I took them in the right fashion. That you're copping a spray because you're not living up to the standard that the expectation that you've set for yourself, number one. And number two, it is to make you better, switch you on at times, I should say. But then if it's a post-game sort of spray, yes, it's in the heat and disappointment. But as the week goes on, it's about making you better as a player so that you can strive forward yourself. But all, more importantly, you make the team better if you do this better. So the spray, you've got to just handle it the right way. They're never personal to me. They're always football-based to make you better.
That would have been nice. I should have played under your coaches. I got them personally, and they didn't. They didn't work. In fact, they did the opposite. It wasn't a great system that we were running for a little while there at the Hawks back in the old days. We're under a lot of pressure. We're under financial pressure. We nearly folded. Financial pressure. Everyone was feeling it.
Oh, mate. We were there too half. Don't worry about that.
They're all personal. All personal sleepers. Leave the personal stuff away. Turning our attention now to the world of Super Netball and a press release that came across my desk last night. I must admit I read with a heavy heart because Maddie Brown has called time on her Super Netball career. She's been one of the absolute standout players throughout her 15 domestic league seasons, and it's all come to an end effective immediately. She's a retiring legend is what she is, and she joined us on the Breakfast Club. Maddie, good morning.
Good morning. Retired legend, not quite there yet because I've woken up with a hangover already. I need a bit of work on this, I think. So I'll get there. There's always pre-season, isn't there? So I've got to set some new goals, I think.
Look, it takes time. It takes time to adjust to that sort of stuff, Maddie. But trust me, from speaking from experience. But what's happened? Well, why are we retiring now, Maddie?
Well, I guess... this season was always in my mind going to be my last. Coming back from my second ACL, the motivation was definitely there to want to play again, and I still felt like I could give something to the sport and something to the team. And there was that nice little cherry on the top of playing alongside my sister. So, yeah, it's been a really, really long, hard, I think, journey to get back to this point. So, when I was here and I was enjoying it and lapping it all up, I think I even got to round three and I was like, Kels, I know this is right, but this is definitely going to be my last. So she's known for quite some time and so is the family before coming into this hub life. But, getting out there and being able to play again, I've lapped it up and really enjoyed that opportunity because, you know, as sad as it is, you never know when it is going to be your last. But against the fever, I came off and I was like, oh, I'm pulling up really sore. I'd had a little bit of swelling, which is fairly normal for me, but I just thought it was load management. And then, we went and got it drained a couple of times to get the fluid out. And I was like, this is going good. And then all of a sudden I went to training one day and I was like, this is not right. Something's wrong. So we went in for an MRI and obviously some damaged cartilage. And it's just too risky to play on that and possibly do further damage. And I guess it was a decision of, well, do I continue to play for the rest of this season, or will I be having a knee replacement at 40? And, you know, quality of life is something moving forward that I need to think of. So, and just with the condensed season, I just don't have time to have surgery and get back. So it is what it is. But, it's been very nice in the last, not even 24 hours to have so much love from people. And, it's been quite heartwarming.
Well, you should be getting a lot of love because you've been an absolute icon of the sport and Australian sport, full stop, let alone just netball. So you should be very proud of the legacy you leave. But I'm just picking up on something you said there. Has it, coming back and working so hard to get to this point again, has it been a bit more emotionally draining than you thought?
Yeah, and I think it's just like I would joke with Kelsey because we're living together in this situation up here. I'm very grateful that, little things like this, like I've never been able to live with my sister and I'm doing these types of things. But the emotional, mental, even like the physical work I had to do to just get back because of, game day was every 2 to 3 days was really hard. Like I'd be icing, I'd be doing electric sodas of a night to try and keep the swelling off my knee. I hardly went outside. I felt like I was in lockdown, even though I could, because I was like, I'm up to the ice machine, time to go get some extra massage, time to get some needling. Like, all of the things to get myself right were just, like, piling on top of one another. And I was like, I love game day. I love getting out there and competing, but all of this stuff to get there is quite hard. And, you know, I'm not sure whether or how much longer I can really do this. So my body, as I said, has given it everything it could, and it's just said, now it's time to stop and respect me just a little bit more. And, yeah, maybe just back it off a little bit. The elite level, I still want to play, obviously, but the elite level is just, yeah, needs to be, I need to step away because it's a matter of, obviously, as I said, having a good quality of life.
So you were desperate to play with Kelsey, and that happened this year. What was it like? Was it everything you thought it would be? Was it different? What was that experience like?
It was, and I have said it, and it honestly is like the proudest moment, like to step into that centre circle with the ball in my hand to take the centre pass and look down there and see her and have a little laugh and have a giggle. And yeah, it was so special. And it was a shame that Mum and Dad obviously weren't here to watch it live, but they're missing us so much, and we've been missing them a lot as well. But it was everything. I mean, I think both of us over the last couple of days have had a lot of tears and a lot of hard, you know, decisions to have to make. But it's been nice to be there with each other. And, what if we never get to do it again? And I'm like, and what if our, you know, grand final or our, you know, next century is something away from sport that we get to do together? So, you know, I think it's just putting things into perspective. And, yep, it was only seven, but to us it was seven of the best, and I wouldn't change that.
Tommy Greer, there's no rest for him, though. CEO of the South East Melbourne Phoenix in the NBL. All sorts of action stations taking place in the NBL in the build-up to the new season. He joins us. Tommy, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, buddy. Great to have you with us. Now, do we know there is... I think there are some dates penciled in at the moment from the NBL perspective, but how pencil-y is that pencil?
good question. So the date at the moment, look, as far as we're aware, the league is still sort of aiming for that December 3rd start, but obviously, since that task force has been put together, there has been, you know, a little bit of that talk if that is the sort of the best date moving forward for the league. Obviously, given that priorities for the league is playing in front of crowds, you know, it's a massive thing for the sport and for all the clubs to make sure that we actually have crowds in venues. So you can definitely see the positives of potentially pushing it out a little bit, but you know, as a club, we'll really sort of be guided by that task force that the NBL's put together.
Does it make it difficult from a recruiting perspective, and particularly from an import perspective, as to what you can plan for and sell to prospective players?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does make it a little difficult in regards to that, but you've got to, I guess, try and manipulate it to your advantage a little bit. And you know, there's a lot of, EuroLeague and a lot of those massive sort of leagues across the world are struggling to set season start dates and that sort of stuff at the moment as well. And given how safe Australia is sort of far and wide, we've got a pretty good selling point. So I actually think it might, if you can hold off and you can sort of play that game of cat and mouse or chicken a little bit for a little bit longer, there might be some really high talent guys looking for a safe location to play.
Yeah, so is that a matter of sitting tight and waiting for what happens around the world? Because, as you say, with us being relatively safe and with what we're doing, players won't be making their decisions till late?
Yeah, that's it. So it's sort of it is that waiting game. So sort of waiting to see what EuroLeague and some of those massive clubs around the world end up doing with their season. So we already know that a lot of those massive clubs over there, their budgets have been halved and all sorts of stuff like that. So there is a lot of really big names kicking around at the moment, sort of starting to look towards the NBL. So I think it could ultimately be a real win for the league.
So what does that mean for the local players, though? Is it a chance to get your chance to be put offside by the local players because they're going, well, hang on a second, I've got to sort out my career too. You're waiting for these international guys that might never come.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, we're only allowed to have the two international players anyway, so it doesn't necessarily affect the Aussies that way. You know, we lock up the Aussies, and most clubs have all the Aussies locked away ready for the next season anyway. So it doesn't necessarily impact them, given we're only allowed a certain amount of imports on a roster each year.
You talked about their budgets, Tommy, and the European leagues particularly being slashed. What about your budgets? How's the forecast affecting the way you go about your business?
Yeah, absolutely. I meant, obviously, we've seen the sort of agreement with the Players Association, which happened really early on, which obviously affected our budgets in terms of putting rosters together. And, you know, it's just something we've got to be mindful of this season. You know, depending on the length of the season, that'll dictate, you know, what we're actually going to be able to contribute towards those players I was mentioning earlier, those big sort of European names. But, I mean, the same as every league in the world, you know, those sort of player roster budgets are definitely going to be impacted this year and probably won't go as hard as we normally would have.
Dylan Scheel is our guest from the Inner Sanctum of the Bombers every second week here on The Breakfast Club. We think it's fantastic. Dylan, good morning.
Good morning, fellas.
I can hear birds chirping in the background. That's a nice sound to wake up to, Dylan.
Yes, can you hear me clearly, though?
Yeah, we got you. You're all good.
Yeah. I'm just outside having the morning coffee, just at the Novotel. We're staying at it in Twin Waters, Maroochydore, so... some kangaroos jumping around as we speak, and yeah, it's a nice day here.
So who are you hanging out with in Hub Life? Who are you with?
We're sharing our resort with Collingwood, Melbourne, and the Melbourne Storm.
And the Storm, yes, that's right. Do you cross over much with the Storm guy? Do you stop and have a coffee, or are you not allowed to do that, or how's it work?
Technically, we're not really meant to be hanging out with people from other teams, but, you know, we do cross paths a bit and, you know, say hello and interact. We are only human, but, yeah, everyone here seems like, you know, great people and, you know, we're all in the same environment trying to achieve the same thing. So, it's a nice place to be and everyone's really respectful of what we're trying to do.
Are there any guys at the Storm you look at and you think, by goodness, you're massive?
Yeah, like all of them. All the guys are... Probably the only guy that we don't look at and think's massive is Cam Smith. But we look at him for a different reason, because he's just a goat.
Because he's Cam Smith, that's right. That's right.
So reflecting, you're going through this really tough phase where you've got, Thursday, Tuesday, Sunday. So there's a lot of footy in a short period of time. But the game against the Eagles, there were some encouraging signs there.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, we didn't get the result we wanted, obviously, against the Eagles. But we played a pretty good brand of footy for most of the game. We just lacked a bit of execution, and you know they're a premier team of the competition. So when you come up against teams of that caliber, they are going to, you know, make the most of their opportunities. You know, they probably weren't at their best, but they were still able to get the job done.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things at the moment with the Bombers that you're frustrating your fans because, and I think it's because you're showing glimpses of excellent football, but it's just not sustained football. What's the talk internally about the overall picture over the last, you know, say, three or four games?
It's going to take a while to get where we want to get to. I mean, you know, it's not going to take, you know, one season to try and win a premiership. It's going to take years to keep building, keep improving, to finally be in a position to play some high standard footy. But in the last few weeks, we're taking steps forward. We're just not getting the results that we desire, and we understand that. Football is a win-loss, sometimes a draw industry, and the fans are going to be frustrated.
Sometimes a draw. I've never heard anyone talk about football as a win-loss, sometimes a draw industry.
Well, it is true.
It is true. Well, you've experienced that this year.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an interesting way to look at it. It doesn't get any easier to win, loss, slash sometimes draw when one of your key playmakers is out. Andrew McGrath, injury keeps him out for a little while now. That's a blow because he's had some sort of season. And I know you've spoken about him a lot with us in the last couple of years and his development, the way he goes about his business and the way you admire him for that. What about his season so far for the Bombers? It's been fairly explosive, hasn't he? He's been pretty good.
Yeah, he's taken another step forward in his development, and you know, it's sort of a reflection of the work that Andy puts in behind the scenes that a lot of people won't see. He's a true professional the way he goes about his footy, and not just his footy, his life actually. So you know, the season that he's had is, you know, would be explosive to a lot of people, but you know, a lot of people at the footy club would have predicted that he was going to be capable of playing this type of footy. So it's great that he's you know, got to that level, and really unfortunate what happened with him a couple of nights ago with his ankle. So we're certainly going to miss him. He's been so important to us.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I'm interested as a midfielder, Dylan, the difference now compared to 3 or 4 games ago, where all of a sudden you've got Jake Stringer and particularly Joe Danaher in that forward line. Does that make it easier for you guys to go forward with confidence and go forward with speed, knowing that that's ahead of the ball?
Yeah, I mean, look, we've got obviously some experience in the forward line now, which certainly helps. And you know, when you look up and you see guys like that you mentioned ahead of the footy, you are more inclined to take the chance or hand over the responsibility to those guys when at times we might have had to hold the ball up and wait to get numbers ahead of the footy. So, you know, the more we can get these guys in the park for longer, the better we're going to play footy, because, you know, we haven't played, as a core group of players, we haven't played that much footy together.
If it was Lucky Neal's birthday, I don't think it is, but he's a superstar for the Brisbane Lions and he joins us on the line. Good morning, Lucky.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on this morning.
A pleasure to have you on. Thank you for being on this morning, particularly after your home ground was yesterday announced as the venue for the AFL Grand Final in 2020. How did that news go down at Brisbane Lions training yesterday?
Yeah, we actually had the day off, so I haven't seen any of the boys since the announcement, but it is really exciting, not only for us, but for the state of Queensland and the city of Brisbane, and it's a credit to all the hard work that the state's done in sort of getting this season underway and hosting a lot of teams. And I think it's exciting for the state, and hopefully it can grow the game even more. It's grown a lot even since I've been here, and the interest around AFL has certainly spiked here, and hopefully that continues, and hosting the grand final is an awesome achievement, and looking forward to seeing how that all plays out. It'll be a great night.
How big of an advantage is it, do you think, to be having it at the game, at the ground that you train and play at week in, week out?
Well, we've got to get there first.
That's true.
Too much if we don't make it. I think it'll certainly help us, I suppose, if we were able to make the grand final. But having said that, doesn't matter where it's played, you've still got to win it. And you see that every year with it being played at the MCG. A lot of Melbourne teams obviously make the grand final, and sometimes they don't win, even though they've probably played a lot more footy than the interstate teams that year. So, it's exciting. We've got to get there, as I said, but even if we don't, I think it's going to be an amazing spectacle for everyone here in Queensland. And, it's just great that the AFL have given it to Queensland this year.
So you said, Lockie, that even in the short time you've been up there, you can see the interest in AFL sort of improving or increasing. I mean, can you put a sort of a comment on what you think the difference will be now that the final series, the grand final, is going to be played in Brisbane?
Probably not, but I just think the interest around the game, and there'll be a lot of hype and entertainment and whatnot, and there'll obviously be a few functions and things throughout the week that will help spread awareness and hopefully growth for the game. And as I said, even since I've been here travelling around schools and stuff, obviously not so much this year, but last year once the Lions started winning some games, you could certainly tell the interest in the game was growing. And to be honest, it probably doesn't hurt that the rugby teams aren't going that well this year, and the Gold Coast and the Lions are playing quite well and attractive footy in the AFL. So I've certainly noticed a bit more interest in the game than when I first came. I think the Lions were coming off a 5-win season the year before I got here, and You could walk around and not speak footy to many people, but it's certainly changed a little bit since I first arrived, and the players at the club get recognised a little bit more, and just the talk about AFL amongst the community has certainly grown, and hosting a lot of the games, the majority of games this year, that's gone up a level again, which is great.
Now, the bye, I mean, it's not really a bye, it's just a couple of extra days off with this the season the way it is, but did it actually come at a good time for you? Because as you are a better team, the expectations on you as a team are higher, and while you've been winning, you haven't probably been at your absolute best recently. What sort of impact do you think that little freshen up might be, particularly going into such a big game tomorrow night against Collingwood?
Yeah, hopefully we come out with a lot of energy. I think that's one thing that's been lacking a little bit. We certainly weren't energised, I suppose, against North Melbourne a couple of weeks ago, and came out pretty flat. And as you saw, Fags gave us a bit of a rev up at half time, which is pretty uncommon for him. So, yeah, I think against St Kilda, they're a great side, and we felt like in that third quarter we probably should have been a lot further ahead, and we thought we'd played some pretty good footy, but one thing that's let us down all year really is our inaccuracy, and we've had a lot of close games, but we feel like in patches we're not taking advantage of our dominance and kicking straight and leaving the gate open for opposition teams when they get a run on where we should be sort of 4 or 5 goals up. We're leaving it at about 2 goals and teams feel like they're in with a chance. So if we can kick a bit straighter, it would certainly help our cause. But I think we've had a 7-day break, an 8-day break, and now 12-day break. So in this season, that's massive. And we've got 3 coming up in short succession, so hopefully those sort of 3 decent breaks will help us for these 3 games coming up before we reset and have a normal week off, I think, against Carlton in the last round. So no excuses from us. We've had plenty of rest, and we should be ready to go tomorrow night and moving forward.
They did a bit of a number on you last season up there at the Gabba, the Magpies, and I know it's a very different world and things are very different now. And this season, the way it's played is very different too. But are those things, little things that Fags has up his sleeve just to keep in the back of your minds leading into this game?
We haven't actually spoken about playing them last year. I think they're a different side this time around, and we play a little bit differently as well. So I doubt we'll revisit that. We've more looked at the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks, how they've been playing and the way that we've been playing, and little things that we can improve on, and they're a lot different to last year. I think last year, that game, and then we played Essendon the week after, and both of them were 60-point losses. So we tinkered some things then and changed a little bit of our game plan and our ball movement and stuff after those 2 big losses, because it wasn't working for us, and we haven't really looked back since.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.